The date is the 30th of August 1994. This is a series of brief interviews looking at broad perspectives in the history of the city. This is the 10th interview with Councillor Tom Giles, who's been on the Council of the City of Berwick since 1975.
I was born in Ormond, and my father, as an engineer, started a job in Dandenong when I was, I think, 8, and we shipped it out to Dandenong. So I was with the Dandenong West Primary School and grew up in the Dandenong area. I think when I was about 13, we moved to Listerfield, which is on the back of the hills of Dandenong. I used to travel to school in Dandenong on a bus because that was the way to get to school. And I even went to secondary college at Caulfield. And I travelled on a bus and then a train to Caulfield and then back and rode the bicycle back to home. So when we were, I must have been about 18, I think, we moved back into Dandenong. And we lived Dandenong until I got married. And then I think a couple of units around Dandenong. We lived in a house and in a unit. And when I was married to Inika, I met Inika at the youth club because it was the church that we went to at the Dandenong Methodist Church at that time, which was a pretty involved and fairly large church in here with a big youth club. And there were a lot of young people around Dandenong and Dandenong North. Dandenong North was a new development which had occurred and brought a lot of people out. And it occurred before Doveton, but it's a similar sort of concrete housing unit, so I worked a lot with young people in that area. And then we bought our block of land at Hallam. And Catherine was 1 year old when we moved to Hallam. There weren't that many houses in George Avenue. I think there were four or five in the street. Unmade road, no footpath. But still something young people can afford, and we built this contemporary style house, and our neighbours started to put bricks on the block of land about the same time, and they built a house next door, and was one built a couple of doors down the road, and so it was a newly developing area.
So it was one of the... Just to interrupt you at that point, do you know about what year that was that you moved to Hallam?
Well, it must be about 31 years ago. Now, I'm only doing that by... Yeah. So it's about that order, but I can get the actual date.
Because George Chudley said how every time a new family was moving to the area, they'd always try and speak to them.
Yeah, well, George was, of course, in the area at that time, yes, because they were looking for preschool primary school and so on. And it wasn't that long after, in fact, long after we'd moved there, that the primary school was moved onto the hill.
Right.
I can remember the hall being moved... The old hall being taken from the highway and moved on the recreation reserve. But at that stage we had just started to get involved in the local area. Frawley Road was not made, and there was a local ratepayers association which was fairly active, and I became active in the local youth club as well. It was a very small, close-knit community, and we pounded our councillors for getting Frawley Road made, which was just a dusty hole. It actually ended in a farm, but just behind us, where the freeway now is, was a farm. I think Sid must have been on council then, because I can remember something about him pushing through this road down to Doveton, and we weren't terribly happy with that because we'd been fairly isolated and we could see all the traffic now going through the centre of Hallam down there. But the road was made, and I was became a secretary of the Ratepayers Association, present for a short time, and I'd always been involved with the White House, with the youth club, which I'd been asked to help with kids, and our local church, which was on the top of the hill, was also part of the community. Our children got to the stage where they started to go to preschool, and we had a preschool by then. It had been built down on the block at Spring Square, and I can remember there were the primary school and the high school. The high school was just being built, but we used to have a fete, a Hallam fete, and we'd have it in the Spring Square. In the square itself was the place where we'd have the fete, or we'd later on we at one stage we had it on the school grounds, but Spring Square where we had the tent, and there was no preschool. But eventually the preschool, Inika was on the preschool committee, was president of that for a few years. And then on the Mothers Club, or the PFA as it was at the primary school, I was on the school council. And it was about that time that the city of Berwick was being muttered about. There ought to be, we were part of the Shire and we were getting a pretty rough deal. We needed things like streets made and so on like that.
The Hallam ratepayers
were a fairly dynamic group at that stage.
Mm-hmm.
There was virtually no Endeavour Hills, of course. Yeah. There were a couple of houses, but that's about all. It just started over there. Four Oaks might have started. The Hallam ratepayers, we'd have meetings with maybe 100 people there. It was all the locals. It was very dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And at that stage, when the city of Berwick was formed, my next-door neighbour, Jim Alexander, became a councillor. He stood for the council, the local one. David Lee stood for council, and George Chudley stood for council. And they were supported by the ratepayers as an organisation and became our local councillors. I think in that first year in council was pretty turbulent. There were they got into the little country roads board building, as it was down on Kays Avenue. It was very tight squash in there for them, for everyone. I can remember going down to the office and gradually there seemed to be another office and another office. I think we ended up with three of them eventually built there to make enough room for people, but it certainly was very tight. Mm. Everyone was very close to, but certainly it was very available to us locals who lived in Hallam. There was the local municipal offices. And we had at that stage, I know we're very proud that the City of Berwick had a community, a social planner, another looking at what were the needs of the community, and other councils didn't even know what you were talking about. In the first year was fairly turbulent, and there started to be a bit of stress between what they was called the developer side and the more the greeny side, I suppose, or the green break side, or the people who wanted a more controlled development. Mm. And so in the first year, our mayor, Barry Simon, lost his seat. And a few other councillors.
David Lee
lost his seat. That's right.
And Joan Phillips.
It was the ones who were supporting the edge, because we were talking about the Green Break and the Development Corporation and ways of providing a background. Remember, at this stage, I was a fairly active member. In fact, I think I might have been president. I was either president or secretary of the Hallam Ratepayers Association, and we were quite upset with what was going, because we were the urban edge and we wanted to see proper development occurring.
Mm-hmm.
And we were fairly outspoken because we had supported David Lee, but the people who lived on the more undeveloped areas had certainly got themselves into gear to get people in who were opposed to this more controlled and more purchased development. I think Hugh Hodson, who an estate agent from Hallam, and I know Hugh very well, was elected to council, but he was considered to be one of the developer supporters. I think Ron Irwin might have been elected too, I'm not sure at that stage. And so there became almost a bit of pressure. The ratepayers organisation got more involved then in what were the local politics of who and where we should be developing. We were talking about a green break about where Fitzgerald Road is. There ought to be a stop to the urban development, and then we should be a new planned city. And the people down at Fitzgerald Road really got up in gear or around about that area at that stage. And when the annual general meeting of the Ratepayers Association was held that year, they were there in big numbers, and the current officers lost their seats, and new officers were elected. And I think there was only ever one meeting held of the Hallam Ratepayers Association from that time onward. It just was not, didn't go any further. But the following year I stood for council, and I got in with a fairly large majority. It was when I got on council, it was interesting because I was kind of the backlash against that it had gone too far the other way.
Yeah.
And so there were...
So were you a friend of Jim Alexander's?
I was a friend of Jim Alexander's and Jan Bateman's, and I became I think to a certain extent you've got to remember that I come from a business background. Mm. I have a business in Dandenong. My family has always been business orientated. We've started our own business, and I think that from that point of view I wasn't considered to be a school teacher or a or someone who worked for the government,
mm.
I was convinced it would be someone who knew something about the way in which cash flows work and that sort of thing. Mm. So to a certain extent, whilst I certainly was much more concerned to see the social development of the area, I had a fair bit of support also from those who perhaps was thought themselves to be the right wing or the more conservative element. It's true at about that. In fact, just before that, I was also a member of the Liberal Party in Hallam, and I'm president of the local branch of the party. So I had a fair bit of support and background in that area.
Mm-hmm.
I had at that stage. I haven't been active in the party now for I suppose 20 years. But I had that kind of background. But I also am fairly strongly one for the need for planning and whereas it was the weakness in planning that the conservative element wanted less planning and the other side wanted more planning.
Mm.
And I guess over the years you've seen me, I've been fairly strongly on the planning issues that I believe we need to do it right and be careful and just we're not particularly interested in people getting the maximising of their return from their development or their interest, but in fact if it costs, well then it costs. It's got to be put in place because that's the infrastructure that's needed later on.
This sounds very similar to Barry Simon's perspective.
Yes, well Barry, I can remember when Barry was elected, of course we were part of the ratepayers group. There was the Endeavour Hills ratepayers group, a small group for Endeavour Hills, the Harkaway ratepayers, the Berwick ratepayers, the Hallam ratepayers. There wasn't a Narre Warren one, there wasn't a thing. But we were all behind the...
Mm-hmm.
I guess the Barry Simon's campaign in the early stages, and we would be called out to a meeting of, I'm trying to think what the rate payers, we had an umbrella organisation for rate payers in the city,
mm-hmm.
and in those first 2 years there was indeed, the rate payers organisation saw themselves as the watchdog of where it was going, and so we would have quite a turbulent meetings where we would go and see, try and plan and turn up at council meetings in the little offices down there. So I had an introduction to it of being involved in those sorts of issues. Mm. I suppose it does go back to my early involvement. I've always been involved in community groups. I've either been a youth club leader or in the church. I've been a local preacher and a member of the parish council and so on. So I've always been a community, and I guess my kids have got wrapped up into that sort of thing. Maybe they've reacted a little bit the other way. As I said, why Dad's always not there and Mum's always at the meetings and we were always at one meeting or another. So there was this kind of push, I guess. I wasn't so much one of the in ones, and it was interesting when I was elected or that I really sat on the almost on the crossbench, although I was certainly one of the lefties or the greenies at that stage, as they referred to us, and so. But I probably threw the balance of power back with my election, but I had I was given a great deal of by the Conservative people, a great deal of credence and a great deal of support in many ways, and so I was a bit of a strange animal, I guess, and I suppose to a certain extent I might even still be. It was interesting that when I was elected mayor the first time, it was because Bill Hudson nominated me, and he had been seen almost as the organiser on the right of the conservative element.
Mm-hmm.
I could see the people are shaped very much from their experiences in life. Mm-hmm. And Bill had come up through the Depression. My father had come up through the Depression. And the way they looked at the way, you had to be very careful with how you spent money. You mustn't waste it. You must get good value for it. And it belongs to people so that they can do with it what they need, and rather than taking the money off them and some government doing the things, it was better to leave more freedom to the individual to be able to achieve those things.
Mm.
And so one had to be very careful when we went into areas which were not drains or roads or something, that we weren't taking away their ability to do things that they would like, that taking away their freedoms.
Mm.
And so I can understand that, and I always understood that with Bill and so on, it was very much being shaped by the Depression years, and the areas where there wasn't much money and people had to fight and keep what they have. And I can still see that now with a lot of the people out there. There was, I can remember when Jack Thomas had been mayor. I think it must have been in the third year, the year I was elected. Barry Simon had been mayor the year before that Jack Thomas had been mayor. When I was elected, I had very new councillors sitting around the table, mm-hmm. and they were talking about who was going to be mayor. Mm-hmm. There was this push that Jack had done such a good job that he should get in. And Jack was a very even-handed one. Jack was a very devout Catholic. And I guess whilst he may have been seen to be a businessman, again, being involved with Standard Roads and so on, he had quite a liberal social view about supporting people. And so there was a fair bit of support. And when the vote was taken before council, it was going to be Jack to be mayor again. And so the normal tradition is that council they're not opposed. The choice that's done beforehand is not opposed. But when it came into the open council at the annual statutory meeting, Ron Irwin was voted, and Jack said, "I'm not going to stand, it'll divide council," and withdrew his nomination, and Ron Irwin became mayor. Now, I can remember the bitterness that flew that was from that for a number of years, and that divide very much divided, I guess, that conservative camp about whether people would keep their word. And for quite a number of years, the concept of gentlemen's agreements were thrown about. Keith Wishart was very strong that there weren't no gentlemen around, you couldn't trust a gentleman's agreement, and so what went on in camera or what had been decided before had to be fought out in open council. Mm. And so there were some quite bitter fight outs in local council. But by the time I came to become mayor, a lot of that had settled down, and people were generally pushing for what they saw was the best. Mm. But there were some very turbulent years in there, the years when you had the division in the council, and the John throwing the milk across the table at a committee meeting at one of the others and so on. Really, I don't know that it was that upsetting, but he got so upset with Sid, he just picked it up and threw it at him, and our friend Sid could upset people. Mm. Yeah, so there's quite a bit of colour in those early years in council. It certainly, there weren't as many committees, they weren't anywhere near the population, and we practically knew all of our ratepayers by name. I would, when I stood for Hallam, and I would go in and I would visit every house, and I could go, and everyone I would know me personally, and I would know them personally, and that has disappeared now, of course, because now there are such a vast number of people moved in.
It seems that in the early years, council could work through the ratepayers associations, whereas now it has to have these consultative committees.
Well, the ratepayers organisations disappeared. In the early days, Hallam fought for its Frawley Road and its preschool and so on, and everyone belonged to the ratepayers organisation or became part of it. As it grew beyond the village, the ratepayers organisation didn't hold together. Firstly, there was the fight, which led to its breaking down. It could have been there for another 5 or 10 years, probably. Yeah. But as the areas have got bigger, the ratepayers' organisations have become smaller and less relevant. So now maybe the neighbourhood watch covers a certain area, or the primary school committee, or and so on. Mm. But nowhere near any of the numbers are involved in the community. Yeah. We're now only, whereas it would have been nearly everyone involved, now you're only lucky to have a tenth or 20th part of them involved in the community activities, yeah. Mm. So now we no longer have that, where we could say, council wants to talk to the ratepayers' organisation about such a development. Yeah. Maybe it was the Guns Road development, which was talked about in those days, or the purchase of Peluso's land, which was the creek. Mm. We could talk to the ratepayers, what do you think about that? Or the ratepayers would write and say, we should. Now we don't have that. We have to call a meeting of the community, and we get 20 or 30 people turn up, and we think that's good. Mm. Whereas in those older days, you'd have 150 jumping up and down and saying what they thought. So we've lost that community involvement. Mm. And so I guess it's meant that one has to be a lot more careful about interpreting what the community wants, because it's not just what I want, because it's easy to see, you know, I've been shaped very much by my experiences and my understandings and my growth of the way I see things. Mm. And there are a lot of other people who have been shaped by a different way of looking at it, especially as you look at the ethnic mix, which we now have. The people who have moved into the city in the last 10 years have very much come from very much different backgrounds and see things differently. But I have never had anyone say to me, well, I said someone, I've had a couple say jokingly the rates are too high. But generally when I talk to them, they will say, well, they would rather pay the rates that Berwick gets and get that bit on top that is services to the people. And I think people, they've always seen it as a council which provides service to people, compared to, say, Dandenong, who's always had the bad image, or Pakenham, which has been the rural edge. Dandenong's had the bad image even from when it was libraries. We would say, we will put a library where the people are, and Dandenong said, no, we'll have one library and you can all come to us in Dandenong. We'll be the central library, you see. So, and even on the library service, which I served on the committee, and I served as chairman of the library service for a while. I served as a year as chairman, but on the library service for many years. You could see this conflict between Dandenong's centralism and commercialism and Berwick's taking the services to the people. So we have a leisure centre node at Endeavour Hills, we have one at Doveton, we had Hallam's a little bit small, unfortunately, but it's still got its recreation reserve and its hub. Narre Warren has always been split very much by the highway, the Civic West and so on, and now we've got the rapid growth. And Berwick Village had its, and Harkaway had its kind of centre, but it was very much constrained in growth.
Mm.
I talk a lot, don't
I? No. Which particular planning decisions do you think?
I can remember the worst one. I remember the worst one, and the officers will never let me forget it. It happened in those somewhat turbulent times when Jack Thomas, he wasn't mayor, but the Catholic Church was looking for a place in Narre Warren in which to build a church, and they were offered the land on the northern side of the highway where the church now is. It was one of their parishioners, Sweeney had owned the land there and was going to give them at a good price. A piece of land, and the planning office said, well, there will be no housing development. Everyone who goes to that church or goes to that school will have to cross the highway.
Mm.
And I can remember the argument then around the table, but you know, if the church wants to go there and they're going to provide the facilities, why are we saying you can't? We don't know that there's not going to be any residential development over there, and the anti-planning arguments came out again, and one was convinced to let the and I voted with it to let the school be on that side of the highway, and to this day there will never be a house on that side. Everyone who goes to that school's either got to come by car or cross the highway at the pedestrian crossing in front of the freeway reserve. And the officers say, well, that's the worst planning decision we ever made. I think the best planning decisions were related around very much the creeks and the cell plans, and was involved very much in the decision where to build the city offices. I think that was a good move at the Fountain Gate. There was really the competition between CHI and Overland at that stage to offer what they could for the best facilities, and it became fairly obvious that Overland land was rising and modulating, and the CHI land was flat and was a swampy hole. People were saying, why not put it in the swampy hole? It's not much good for anything else except a civic centre, and the modulating land is good for housing. But in the end, I guess what the package that Isidore Magid put together, and he was quite vigorous at that stage in their presentations, and the council really could select which it saw was the best. And council eventually decided that this was the best site, and off it went to appeal, with the council having made a decision, and the tribunal came in. Now, I think that was a good decision to put in the centre of Narre Warren a new civic centre. At that stage, they were housed on the temporary facilities on the side of the freeway at Hallam, and all the population was down that end, yet this was going to be the centre of the population in the future. And people said, why in the middle of paddocks? When we came down here, there were cows walking around. Why in the middle of paddocks? People couldn't see the vision, but you could stand on that hill and you could see the basin, which was going to fill up with houses. And I think that was a good decision, and it's very much shaped the city based on that.
Mm. And the cell plans and those sorts of
things? Well, the cell plans were a development of the planning process. At that stage, in looking at the development of a city in green field situations, as they were known and still are known as green fields, where you had the opportunity to decide where roads and things are, the Metropolitan Board of Works, who was part of the planning, was the planning authority at that stage, said, well, we need an outline development plan. And so we looked at the shape of the city and looked at where perhaps the connector road should be and where the populations might go, and we drew kind of these outside road developments and developed an outline development plan of the city. But it was pretty schematic, but it did kind of set down where the main road network would go and where might be the commercial centres in that road network and where the housing might go. That tended to set the density so that this side of the power lines, transmission lines, would be basically normal density, because from there on the hills rose into steeper land. Here we had the gentle undulating where the residential, and it tailed off where the flatland and the swamps were at the south. And that sent us kind of a picture. Now that's been rehashed and revisited a bit by the minister's decision to have further development to the south of Narre Warren, as because this area is filling up. But as we then looked at the outlet development plan, you looked, there were a number of ownerships. It was all owned, well, there were large areas like Endeavour Hills, a mile square, that was owned by one operator. But to the north of it, there were three or four subdivisions. But as you moved towards Narre Warren, there were lots of little ones. And those people needed some kind of development plan to follow. And so the concept of having a cell plan which would show where the school should go, where the road should go, where the open space should go, so that you could conglomerate it together, bring it together in a lump, that you could, that when you had a main road, it wouldn't, one person wouldn't have to pay the lot, they'd been contributing a bit towards it. And I think that facilitated a much more sensible sort of and planned development. Some people felt frustrated because they couldn't just do what they wanted to do, but it does give people a more sense of surety of knowing what they can do. And that's usually what the question is, what will we be allowed to do, rather than I've got this proposition, I've done all this work and put it up to council, and the council says, sorry, we don't agree with it. So it was a way of helping people as developers to have a logical plan, helping people to end up with some infrastructure there. And it has enabled us to go to the government and say, so many people will be in this thing, we need a school, or so on. And it's been the basis of our agitation for social facilities.
And you were always very supportive of the social planner's role in all this, were you?
Yes, I guess I'm. Yeah, well, I could see that, in fact, part of it again goes back to my background of my involvement in community activities right from the early stages. That I could see there was need for the community services. There was a need for the social worker, for example, when we were one of the first to have our own social worker, that this was providing for those who needed things more, and you had to have a recognition. And there was always a bit of tension in council in the early days about those who saw that as a waste of time and people should be strong, or it was a role for state government, it was a role for federal government. But if you left it to state government to do, it didn't get done. And you left it for federal government to do, it probably even less didn't get done. So just like the library got a battering in the early days about, you know, why should we be putting so much money into this? It goes back to this, the people saying, well, you know, we'd rather have the services. We pay a little bit more in Berwick, costs us a bit more, but the quality of life is so much better for everyone. You've got these kind of services. Mm-hmm. And I've never... I've had my arguments, I guess, that I don't like to see money wasted, because if you do that, it means there's no excuse for wasting it, as I said, because it would enable you to do so much more with it. Mm. And it's not a matter of perhaps people not paying. If we can, but I don't believe there's no excuse for wasting it. And if we can do it with less people, we should be, because that allows us to use those resources to provide something else.
Hmm. So what other committees have you been on through your role with council?
Well, it's interesting. I've had a lot of committees which I'm on, which are not council committees. I've always had a number of community committees. I've been, when the community health service with the Dufton Hallam service was set up, and Max Oldmeadow called the first meeting. Now, Max was a Labor MP, Federal Labor MP for Holt, I guess, and Max and I had gone to the same church. Now, I might be from one side, I was perhaps involved with the Liberal Party, Max, and they always looked at me and say, you're a peculiar animal, you're on the wrong side of things. But it was interesting that there are a number of small L Liberals, I guess, that I'd classify myself as, and Liberal in the correct term, whether it's trying to let people to decide a lot of the things, give them maximum freedom, but maximum support as well. So when Max called me, I was there at the meeting. I wasn't elected to the committee, but I was appointed a trustee at that meeting. So I was a trustee of the Community Health Centre right from the beginning, and 2 years later I joined the committee. I'm not quite sure why I was trustee, because I'm not sure that I was I must have been a councillor at that time, I think. But being a business person, I was seeing that I could fit into that particular role. And I've been on the Community Health Centre Committee of Management ever since. I've been treasurer for the last, I don't know, 10 years or something, and now I'm on the Berwick-wide Community Health Centre, which provides the services throughout the city. And that's been a pretty strong involvement over the years as we provide community services. We've now got the a centre at Endeavour Hills and a centre at Narre Warren, as well as the centre at Tufton, which is perhaps the main centre from the number of personnel, and a budget of something like, $300,000 a year sort of thing. I was on the Board of Works. I was a commissioner of the Board of Works in the old days. John Byron was the commissioner for years and years and years, and John and I had our tangles. He would be, John could be pretty, perhaps cutting with his remarks at times, but yet, and we could spar and about some of his views. But John lost his seat on council one.